Coast to Coast open lines begin next hour here on Coast to Coast. We'll tell you a little bit more about that. Rick McCallum with us, Andrea Perrin, as we're talking about ghost hunting and the haunted house, the Conjuring story. So we'll take your calls with them when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Rick McCallum with us, Andrea Perrin with us. Rick, have you ever spent the night in a haunted house?
Actually, I lived in one of the most haunted houses in America down in Texas. Yeah, so I spent many a haunted night in one, and I can totally feel the same vibe from Andrea.
Anything bizarre happen? I bet, huh?
Oh, every night. I mean, we didn't tell anybody who visited us, and the next morning, you know, that our place was haunted, the next morning they would be at breakfast, and they'd be stammering all over themselves, and they'd go, you know, about your house, you know, I don't know how to tell. You mean it's haunted? Yes, it's haunted. Yes, yeah, we know. But lots and lots of strange things happened. One night, I was in my bedroom. My brother was sleeping on the couch, and my dad was at the other end of the house, and I heard the heavy bag in the garage being hit. And I figured it was my younger brother, and I figured my dad was going to beat him senseless for, it was like 2:30 in the morning. So I got up, and as I started to walk out of my room, my younger brother, Cash, walks up to me, and he goes, I think somebody's in the garage. So I go walking over there with him, and my dad pops out with my stepmother, Vandy, and he says, there's somebody in the garage. So I got our Great Dane, and I came in through one door. My dad and Cash came in the other door with Vandy hot in pursuit, all 5 foot tall of her. She was ready to throw down. And the heavy bag was moving back and forth, and as we watched it, and I have witnesses out the, you know, that'll tell you this is exactly what happened. You know how when you hit a bag, it'll fly away, and then it'll go back and forth like a pendulum?
Yep.
As it was coming back, like on the pendulum, we heard a thump, and it went flying back the other direction, like somebody had hit it.
Somebody hit it again. Wow.
Yeah, so as we were leaving, you know, we started to walk out. My dad just looked at me. We had about a 170-pound Great Dane, a huge dog. And he just said to me, whispered as we walked back into the house, he goes, let the dog in the house. So, yeah, there was things like that all the time.
Oh, I mean, God. You're like a magnet for these things.
Yeah. I mean, that's really kind of what's gotten me so enthralled with the paranormal. I mean, I seem to be one of those people, and I've had so many people tell me this, that they're just attracted to. I'll go in some place where nothing's happening. As soon as I get there, stuff will start blowing up. As a matter of fact, the guys from Scottish Paranormal, which I think may be the best group in the world, put me in their Hall of Fame after ghost hunting with me. And the only reason I bring that up is because I'm not in any other Hall of Fame. So I got to brag about that one. But, yeah, they just seem to come to me. And, you know, I think Andrea is the same way.
I was going to say, Andrea, did your mother, who took the brunt of a lot of this, change? Did you see a personality change because of this?
Yes. Yes, we did. She was in a very oppressed state for a period of time. And yet what happened, and, you know, Rick's absolutely right. I mean, there are some of us that are, you know, it's our strongest point in terms of our relationship that we can talk about this with each other. And nobody raises an eyebrow because we know our stories are so similar. Well, my mother was a magnet for it. And when we moved into that house, my mother was, she was always a spiritual person, but she was really kind of agnostic. When we left that house, my mother had deep faith because when things went straight to hell in that house, all she had to do was, in a heartfelt way, invoke the name of God and ask for assistance, and whatever was happening would stop. And that was the truth every single time. So, yes, that I think is the most profound change.
Did you stay close with Ed and Lorraine Warren after this case? I know you were just a kid at the time, but maybe later on in life?
No, actually. I didn't see Lorraine until after Ed had passed away. They parted our farmhouse under very bad circumstances. In the movie, it's represented as an exorcism, but Ed was as devout as Lorraine, and he was the only layman on earth at the time that was trained to participate in and to assist in an exorcism. That was not something that he would have ever attempted on his own, just out of respect for the actual exorcists from the Vatican. There was a seance that went very horribly wrong at our home, and it was initiated by Ed and Lorraine and a medium and a priest that they brought to the house. And that night, oh my God, that night was so far beyond anything in the film. There's no comparative analysis to be made. But that night, everybody that was present in that house thought that they had seen my mother die. My father threw the Warrens out of the house, and their whole party that had come, you know, with cinematographers, videographers, just threw everybody out of the house, and we didn't have anything to do with them for 40 years. And then at the opening of The Conjuring, Warner Brothers invited Mrs. Warren and myself out for a private screening of the film prior to the opening, and that's when I saw her, and she had regrets. She said, you know, we did our best, and I knew that. Of course I knew that. And that's when she said that she and Ed found our investigation the most intense, compelling, disturbing, and significant of all the investigations they ever conducted. And that was the time that she admitted that they were in over their heads, but they did the best they could.
Did you ever meet the actor Patrick Wilson who played Ed in the movie The Conjuring?
Oh, yes. I met the entire cast.
Well, my funny story is I knew Patrick when he was a little six-year-old boy because his dad worked with me at the television station here in St. Louis that I was working at. His dad, Father John, was the anchor man, and little Patrick was running around as a little six-year-old. Small world, huh?
Yeah, and with those big blue eyes, yep.
Good
actor. Well, you know, Vera Farmiga and I had a very long conversation at the opening, and the one that I attached to the most was Lily Taylor, who played my mother. And the girls, I mean, they couldn't have cast that film better than they did. And frankly, you know, all of us were afraid that the children making the film would end up being traumatized. And when I met James Wan, I knew immediately that that wasn't going to happen. He treated those girls as though he had birthed them himself. I mean, it was just an absolute relief to all of us. And, you know, I'm sure you're not aware of this, but my sister April died very tragically 4 years ago, and little Kyla Deaver, who played her in the movie, reached out to my family, as did everyone in that cast, to express their heartfelt condolences for our loss. And I appreciate that. To them, it wasn't just telling a Hollywood story. They became very attached to our family, and I'll always be deeply grateful for that.
That's great. Let's go to some calls here. Let's go to Mark in Baltimore to get us started. Mark, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much, George. I appreciate you taking my call. How have you been, and happy Halloween.
Everything's great. Thanks.
That's terrific. Yes, for Mr. McCallum, I remember the last time recently when you had him as a guest, sir, I spoke about the old hag and how it affected me. And recently, I was just entertaining a guest in my home, and the old hag was pushing me back. And I explained to my guest, you know, you might want to leave because of it. He said, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to get you out of that. I said, you don't want to invade it. But he did. He grabbed me, picked me up, and he dragged me into the kitchen, and he could feel it because after it was all over, after we both fell on the kitchen floor, he felt it, and he confirmed it because I asked him to.
Jeez, what do you do about something like that, Rick?
Well, hope you have a friend like he did, evidently. Yeah, it's some things, you know, you have to give more leeway to. There is a time to, you know, think it through before you go through with it. You know, I think that's the best suggestion I can give. You know what you're dealing with before you try to take it on.
You can get hurt doing this, can't you?
Yes.
So it's out there. All right, next up, Braden's with us in Lovell, Wyoming. Welcome to the show, Braden. Go ahead, sir.
It's good to be with you, George.
Thank you.
I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a question, a story, and then like your opinion on it. So we've recently moved to Wyoming, and we rented a house in Cody, Wyoming, and it was haunted. I personally didn't see or hear anything, but above my mom's bedroom, you know, the attic of the house, I had a bedroom in the attic, and there's no way to get into the rest of the attic. And my mom was in there in her bedroom, and all of a sudden she hears these footsteps. She thought it was me.
It wasn't you.
but then she kept hearing them day after day after day. And she also thought it was possible just a creaky old house, because the house was pretty old. Until she put like a thermal, she had an app that could register thermal light, infrared light, and she put it up there when she heard the footsteps one night, and it registered. I didn't see that, but I don't think she kept it. She took a video of that. I don't think she kept it. But that was about a year ago. And just really creepy. And my mom believes someone was probably buried in the crawl space of that house.
Ugh.
And then my mom was also, when she was little, she lived in a house that was originally a mortuary. So she's had a lot of haunted experiences that, like I said, I had that one that occurred about a year ago.
All right. Well, thanks, Braden. Andrea, do you want to react to that? What's walking around in his attic, for crying out loud?
It's...
Something's up there.
It's something. Probably not a raccoon. Spirit will manifest in the form that it can take according to the energy that is available to it. And so sometimes just... If what had happened to us was just occasional footsteps on the stairs, I think we would have been perfectly okay with that. You can't really qualify it according to the levels of the manifestation unless you're dealing with something that's really extreme. So footsteps might be extreme to someone, whereas that would be just pretty much normal daily activity to someone else like Rick or myself. So you can't really qualify it like that. I think it's interesting that, they were trying to at least validate it. I would say, though, the most important thing is, try not to be angry about it or to feed that energy. Just let it be. Sometimes we can live quite peacefully and dwell among the dead and be respectful, because chances are if there is an entity there, it was their house first.
Last night I had a guest on.
My advice, just make peace.
Andrew, we had a Monsignor on last night, Stephen Rossetti, who deals with exorcisms and in demons. Did you ever, while you were living in the farmhouse, have that feeling that there was something truly evil there?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, and even though Ed and Lorraine considered it demonic, I have never seen a demon. I've not encountered a demon. I know that there is pure, unadulterated evil in the world, and whatever it was that attacked my mother was the embodiment of that. And I do know that there are things that we cannot explain, because whatever attacked her levitated her in the chair where she sat and threw her body in that chair 20 feet from the middle of our dining room into the middle of our parlor in a split second. But before it did that, it spoke through her in a language either so ancient that it's unrecognizable or not of this earth. I'll tell you what, George, I told you in person years ago, and I'll repeat it for your audience tonight. I have seen the dark side of existence, and that is why I deliberately live in the light.
Good for you. By the way, give us your website. I'm getting lots of emails about that.
Oh, it's House of Darkness, House of Light. com.
Super. And we'll link that up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Joe in Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program. Joseph, go ahead.
I have a question for both, or Andrea first. I want to ask her, did at any point while looking in mirrors, did any of your siblings or mother see another figure in the mirror?
My sister Christine saw a figure of a woman standing behind her in the pantry when she was about 12, and it totally freaked her out. But none of us ever remember seeing any figures behind us in mirrors, but it was Christine's reflection in the kitchen window where she saw a woman standing behind her. And I think Rick has a story about that too, as I recall.
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, I've had actually several kinds of things, but they weren't actually in mirrors. I've seen a lot of things, reflections in walls and off of off just plain glass.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the places that we really had something really interesting happen was at the Real Mary King's Close in Edinburgh, Scotland. And while we were walking along, we saw something that, you know, I saw something down all the way down the hall. Now, the hall in Real Mary King's Close is on a very steep decline. And at the end, there's a door, and it's super dark. And I looked down there, and the thing that I saw, the best way I could say, is it looked like Michael's David, the famous statue.
Yeah.
And I took a picture, and you can barely see it, but there's enough of it that I show some people, and they instantly see it, and I show other people, and they don't see it at all. But, yeah, in the many years that I've been doing this, I've had quite a few things that I've seen. It will definitely startle you. That's the best way of saying it. I don't get scared, but I do get startled when something's standing there.
And, Joe, you had a quick question for Rick. Go for it.
I'm sure you've seen the Game of Thrones, and I would relate that to Scottish folklore and history somewhat. The thing about Game of Thrones is you had these entities of supernatural figures, but the natural figures were almost as strange, so it kept you guessing. I remember they showed, for example, a comet streaking across the sky during the day in red, and that was super strange. So, and, you know, you might have had to peel back the figures that were in armor to see who they really were. Now, do you speculate that there's a lot of guesswork involved between what is an entity and what is stranger than fiction in real life?
Oh, absolutely. The secret, really, to the paranormal and everything else is debunking everything you can. And then if something is left, then you have something interesting to talk about. And that really takes some work to do, because the first thing you see is what your mind tells you you're supposed to believe. But when you start to break things down, you can say, well, it could have been this and it could have been that. But when you break down everything and there's nothing left but what you saw, then you pretty much have a real occurrence on your hands.
All right, Rick, we're going to come back. Final calls with you and Andrea next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment. George Norrie with you, along with Rick McCallum and Andrea Perrin, as we talk about all things ghostly. Andrea, are you still singing professionally?
I used to for many, many years. I still connect with UFOs and the galactic family that way. But I got a case of COVID before anyone knew what it was.
Oh, no.
And it dramatically injured my voice. It's going to take quite a while for it to come back, I'm afraid.
How did you fight it off? Naturally, or what did you do for it?
Well, I became extremely fatigued, and I got a very bizarre bronchial pneumonia that my doctors could not identify. And it became a systemic blood infection.
Oh.
So they had to, like, pretty much drain my blood and fill me back up with, liquid antibiotics and saline solution and all kinds of stuff. And I spent a month on Cipro, And that knocked out the blood infection, but I lost my singing voice. It changed my speaking voice, and I had no sense of taste or smell for about 6 months. And that all happened in September of 2019 after going to a paranormal conference where I was exposed to a couple of people that had just flown in from England. And they came to the conference ill, and about 30 of us became extremely sick, but nobody could identify what we were sick with. And, you know, a few months later, we knew what it was, but it was too late. But, you know, I'm strong, and I fought, and I consider myself lucky because so many have not survived this. And I just encourage everyone to do what they know they need to do to protect themselves and others, because this isn't a joke. This isn't the flu. And if we don't turn this around, we'll be living with it ad infinitum.
And it'll keep changing on us, too.
And morphing, yes, sir.
Let's go to Tim in Massachusetts. Welcome to the show. Hi, Tim.
Hello, George. Hello, Andrea. I won't mention my last name, but you and I have known each other for quite a number of years. We were introduced by Keith Johnson, one of the first investigators into the farmhouse. And my question for you is, considering the people who have been in the house since your family moved away, and now your family having the opportunity to come back this weekend, have the spirits that you encountered changed at all in their approach toward you or other living people because of the things that have gone on in the ensuing years between, you know, 1980 and now?
You always ask the very best questions, Tim. I really think that there was, I don't know if it's because, you know, I'd love, you know, for George or Rick to speak to this too. I don't know if it was because we were just a whole pile of very energetic children that moved into the house, or that we were, you know, particularly sensitive to anything. None of us had had any experiences with spirit prior to moving to the farm. But, you know, the family that lives there now, their kids have moved out. They're, you know, they were older kids when they moved in, and they were investigators. They knew what they were getting into. We had no idea. And subsequent other families have had different experiences. And that's one of the things I find so interesting, Tim, is that what happened to us and what has happened to others is different. In some respects the same, but predominantly different experiences. And so I have to wonder if it is the amalgamation and the correlation and integration of our own human energy with spirit energy that causes different types of manifestations to occur. And I know I can't give you a definitive answer on that, darling.
Rick, do you want to jump in on that?
Well, I think she said it exactly right. I think that's why she and I are such good friends. But yeah, I do also believe that everybody has a certain energy, a certain vibration that they give off. And I do believe that that is how the spirits will decide who they go to, by who's the most open in things. So you can have the exact same, you know, 10 people in one room, and two of them will have an experience, eight won't. And it's only because the spirits go to who they want to go to. So you can have the same spirits in the house the whole time, and everybody in there will have different experiences.
Let's go to our old buddy Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello there, Bear.
I tell you what, George, as usual, the show is absolute dynamite, and your guests, every one of them are terrific, George, but tonight's a little extra special. And the reason I called, I told Tommy in your new screen here, Julio, or whatever his name is.
Jeremiah.
I told Tommy, I said, I won't ever remember that name.
You remember him.
Yeah, no kidding. I will. Sure, I will. I wish I was him. I want to be a screener on the show.
Thank God you're not.
Thanks a lot.
Sorry about that, but go ahead, Bear.
Yeah, well, God, this is fascinating. My daddy was born and raised until his 21st birthday in Warwick, Rhode Island. And I'm just curious how close you were to Warwick.
Well, considering the state of Rhode Island is 23 miles wide and 52 miles long, I think we were probably, maybe 20 miles away from Warwick. But I used to work in Warwick. I know Warwick very well. And there's some sections of it that are beyond beautiful on Narragansett Bay. So consider your connection to Little Rhode Island to be a significant one. I think that's great.
Now, you were in Harrisville, Rhode Island. Isn't that where the farm was?
Yes, and still is. It hasn't moved.
Right. Exactly. It's there. Let's go next to, whose turn is it? Let's go to David in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Hi, David.
Talking about haunted houses. If you ever want to go to a true haunted house, there's a place in England where they filmed the movie The Haunting. This place is supposed to be haunted big time. My other question is, if Steven Seagal and Chuck Norris ever got into a knockdown, drag-out fight, who would win? Personally, I think Bruce Lee would whip both of them.
Well, I think I can answer that one for you. Chuck Norris would win hands down every single time.
And would not be the instigator, would he?
No, he would not. Chuck is a gentleman to beat the band. And other than, Steven Seagal, who had never competed in anything, Chuck Norris was 4-time world champion.
My gosh, that's amazing.
So,
and how about this place in England? Have you ever been to any of those spots out there, Rick?
Oh, yeah. One of the most haunted places I've ever been to is a place called Bolton Abbey in Yorkshire. And it was at that place that some people were on a altar. It was actually just grass, but it was an altar inside the abbey. And one of them got knocked out. I mean, he was flat on his back out as much as, Mike Tyson hit him. So, I mean, there was people, we were seeing shadow figures. I mean, it was one of the most bizarre places. It's actually, I wrote about that in my book. A lot of the stuff we've talked about is in the book. But, Bolton Abbey in Yorkshire was something. And also, there was another place called the Norwich Theater where, once again, like Andrea said, I saw a full-body apparition not 5 feet from me. And I turned around, and the girl who had invited me, Mandy Fellows from Anubis Paranormal, her eyes were real big. And I looked at her, and she goes, "You saw him too, didn't you?" And I said, "Yeah, sure did." So, yeah, England, Scotland, Ireland, majorly haunted.
After New York we go. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hey, George, Andrea, and Rick. Honored to speak with you guys.
Hi there.
Andrea, I followed your story from when The Conjuring first came out, the movie and your story, and it's always mesmerized me. We actually bought a haunted farmhouse upstate New York. Similar situation. We didn't have the money or the credit. It wasn't even for sale when we first seen it. And then by just chance, we got it. And when we first went to go visit the home, we got there before the realtor. We heard footsteps at the house, the big 4,000-square-foot house built in 1860. And we asked the realtor, "Was anybody here?" He's like, "No, nobody's here." I said, "Well, we heard footsteps." He goes, "Oh, old houses make noises,
Yeah. Some more than others.
Right. But we were looking at the realtor's pictures, and we seen a perfect image of a little woman looking out the master bedroom window. And we're like, "We thought this house was vacant." And then they say it was vacant for 2 years. The people who owned it before us lived there for 65 years and was a very strong-willed little woman. She was a pillar of the community, strong Christian woman. She was on the board of ed. She lived into her 80s. Her husband passed before her. She lived there, and she didn't pass in the home. But there's a perfect picture of her looking out the window. I Googled her and got a picture of her, and it's her looking out the window. Now, the first night we spent in the home, in that master bedroom, my dogs woke up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're growling, staring at the corner. And we woke up and we're like calming them down. And then I said prayers at the home. We blessed the home. And I said, I thanked all the previous generations. We've had no other activity there. I mean, but I've looked at other homes, mainly old Victorians, and I'm an amateur real estate investor. One that they were doing satanic worship, and there was definitely activity in every single one. I've had paranormal experiences from a little boy. I mean, many, many different instances. But I used to have a shop. There was suicides there. There was actually satanic witches that lived in an apartment above the shop out in the country. And I'd be in there working on equipment at like 3:30 in the morning sometimes. And I would just get scared. I would just get a shrill up my spine and scared. And I would say, Jesus Christ, be with me, my Lord. And it would go away. It would go away. You know, I'm a strong, people, you're religious? Said, no, I have a strong faith in God. I mean, everything I have, I shouldn't have. I should have been dead 100 times over. But again, you said your story has always mesmerized with your family's history at the farmhouse.
How long did it take, Andrea, for this to wear off the family, or did it ever?
Oh, no. No, once you're touched by spirit, it's a door that's opened that never closes, and you can turn your back to it and pretend it doesn't exist, but inevitably and eventually something will reach through and tap you on the shoulder and make its presence known. This is a permanent condition. And it's, for me, it's a welcome one, because we're all surrounded by spirit all the time, whether it be from our ancestors. I mean, Rick and I have talked about this ad nauseum, but I mean, you know, you don't have to go one particular place or another to commune or to communicate with spirit, because spirit is all around us all the time. However, there are some places that they seem to gravitate to because of their attachment to the place that they had in life. So, and, you know, and much like the gentleman that just described the little woman of the house still hung around. But, you know, it's a fascinating dynamic that sets up and occurs. And I think that I really do consider it a blessing, not a curse, you know, to be touched by spirit. It's that rare glimpse into the realm from which we come and will all inevitably return. And so my suggestion to everyone is, you know, don't be afraid. Just experience it. Be open to it. It's magical. It's marvelous. And if you really think about it, it's miraculous.
Let's go to our next caller. Javier is with us in San Diego. Javier, go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Hi, George Norrie, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Man, it's my pleasure to talk to you. How are you doing, sir?
Good. Everybody's good.
Cool. Hey, I just had a question. Everything you guys are doing through the whole family, and I know you guys are very spiritual, like, you guys believe in heaven and hell? Like, ultimate?
How about that for you, Rick? Do you believe in heaven and hell?
Absolutely. And, unquestionably, without a doubt, 100%.
Did you always believe in heaven and hell?
Yes. And I've had things that have happened to me that have pretty much, the thing in the car that I was referring to when I was pretty sure I was about to die, pretty much told me everything I needed to know about things like that, because there's more to the story. But I have no doubt.
How about you, Andrea?
I believe in goodness and evil. I believe in darkness and light. And I believe in the prime creator. I believe in extraterrestrials. It's not even believe. I know we're not alone in the universe.
No.
My belief system is larger than most anything on Earth. I don't relegate a place, you know, specifically a place of heaven or hell. I think that there are times that the intermingling of both exists right here on Earth. But I do believe in a higher power and a benevolent power, and I do believe in our redemption and salvation, and I think it's up to us to save ourselves.
Rick, you first. I want to thank you for being on the program again. Keep in touch. You're one of the good guys, and we think the world of you.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate that. Same to you.
All right, you take care. And then, Andrea, you are welcome back anytime you want, dear. Anytime.
Thank you. And I agree with you. Rick is definitely one of the good guys.
Yep, he sure is. All right. Up next, Ghost to Ghost. Folks, as you know, we have over the last month or so been soliciting you to email us with your ghost stories. Tom has been going through the hundreds and hundreds of emails that we've gotten. So some of the calls that will be on tonight are from those emails that he selected. The other calls, of course, will be from you just calling in with your favorite ghost story or haunting or anything like that. So come aboard, and let's have some fun for the next couple hours right here on Coast to Coast AM.